Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to On the Air with Dr. Pat Allen, Empowered Communication, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And we are live on LA Talk Radio. I want to thank the Want Institute for bringing us to be with you here each and every Thursday live. However, next Thursday is Thanksgiving, and so you'll be hearing one of our repeat shows. But we'll see you the week after for sure. However, I want you to know that the One Institute is a 501c3 nonprofit organization, and your tax-deductible donation is always welcome. You can reach out to info@drpatallen.com to discuss. Until then, Dr. Allen, you are live on the air.
I'm glad to be here and ready to work.
We have a very special guest this evening, Dr. Robert Storr. I'm pretty sure LA Talk Radio.
Robert.
Hi, Robert. Welcome to the show. You're live with us. How are you doing?
I'm sorry. One more time. I'm here. Yeah.
You're live on the air with us tonight. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm great. Thank you. Thank you for having me. I was having a hard time catching the technology here, but it flipped to my headset, so I'm here now. Yes. It's a, appreciate you having me on. It's a really good time to have me on in the terms of we are coming up on International Survivor of a Suicide Loss Day this Saturday. It is always the Saturday before Thanksgiving, and they will be having get-togethers throughout the world where people who have lost someone to suicide will have programs and the opportunity to get together with other lost survivors. It's a powerful day of healing for people who are going through that kind of grief.
I agree. And I think it's pretty amazing what's going to be happening on that Saturday. We're looking forward to hearing more about it. I did want to ask you a question before I turn you over to Dr. Allen.
Sure.
We're getting ready.
I'm here.
Hi, good evening, Dr. Allen.
We're getting ready to go into
more lockdowns. And I was looking at some statistics at the rise in suicide and self-harm as a result of these lockdowns. Do you have a word for us about that and how people can reach out if they are feeling like they need help?
Yeah, no, thank you for bringing that up, Kelly. It's a very important discussion right now. What's been happening, and Dr. Pat Allen is the one who taught me this, is we only need five things to survive: food, air, water, shelter, but the most important is strokes. We have to be connected to individuals. And at this point where we're being required to not only stay at home, but to keep a distance, we're not getting the touch or the talk or the connection. And what's happening to people, especially those who are isolated, is it's exacerbating the isolation. And many people are suffering because it's like putting you on a very strict diet without you even requesting it, and a diet of a lack of being able to connect, a lack of strokes from being with other people and exchanging the familiarities as well as the love and the affection and the connection and the touch. And we know physiologically that strands us pretty significantly and it affects our psyche. So what normal people are going through, mild anxiety or depression or stress of everyday life, is now 10 times as bad because your normal coping mechanisms and connections are missing. And so everybody that has been coming into my practice, as well as the employees that work for me, are painfully aware. And people are having a hard time explaining it because they've never been here before. And some people may feel a little bit embarrassed, but people are overstressed. They're overtired. They may be experiencing mild depression. They may be more anxious. They may be short with one another or with their loved ones. They may feel definitely more lonely and isolated. And if you were feeling some of these things already, if you live alone or you've suffered a loss, you are really feeling them much, much more. And so you will reach out for what we call controllable strokes, right? You will reach out for opportunities to either use food, alcohol, drugs, gambling, sex, shopping, spending money, other things that give you controllable strokes, but unfortunately, they don't ever satiate you. They don't satisfy that need to connect, and they can become even worse if you are prone to biochemically be one of those individuals that's prone to become addicted. So it is exacerbating those conditions, and some of those risk factors I mentioned, depression and especially anxiety, isolation, lack of connection, are significant factors in impacting people who are predisposed to suicide. Now, the good news is not everybody is predisposed to suicide, but there is a small percentage of our population, and we're not sure exactly why, but we think there may be biochemical or brain differences among certain individuals that predispose them to thoughts of suicide. If you add in the psychological factors like isolation, stress, lack of connection being key, individual risk factors can be elevated, and therefore it's important they know there is a National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. And if you don't mind, I'll share that number just briefly.
It's
1-800-273-TALK. So it's 1-800-273 in the letters TALK, T-A-L-K, or you can text the crisis line by texting TALK to 741-741. That's 741-741. So if you're a veteran and you call that number, 1-800-273-TALK, and that's 1-800-273-8255. If you want to speak to the Veterans Crisis Line, it's actually the same number. You just press 1, and the Veterans Crisis Line will be activated. The difference there is everybody around the United States specifically who called that number will be routed to a crisis line in their area. You must find your administration, the VA. The good news about that is they understand veterans, they're well-trained, and they can connect you to resources that are specifically designed to help veterans. And veterans as well that might be suffering from post-traumatic stress or military sexual trauma or other issues associated with military service and transitioning out are also of a higher risk for suicide. We know they die twice as often as civilians, 20 per 100,000 per day versus 10 per 100,000 day for the civilian population. So thank you for asking that. It is a very stressful time. We've not only been isolated, we've been dealing with volatile politics, the rise in awareness of racial injustice and inequity, and the desire to remedy that, in addition to the virus. So we have sort of a triple whammy right now, and I'm glad people like you, Dr. Pat Allen and Kelly, are available. But they can also, again, call the crisis line at 1-800-273-8255 for assistance.
Yeah, and I think one of the interesting things is that the holidays approaching and them limiting and telling you not to be with family is only exacerbating that entire situation. So it's like the cherry on top of all the other things that are happening.
No, you're exactly right. I think, and this is where I've been thinking and racking my brain as well for everybody is, so how do we deal with that if we're not immediately suicidal, but we are experiencing a crisis? And the reality is you have to reach out whatever way you can. I know we have technology like Zoom, Microsoft Teams, and other technology that allows us to do virtual sessions and virtual connections. But it's good to go out and walk. It's important to get outside right now. It's important to see other people, to feel the weather and the temperature, to get grounded in your senses. But also then to be able to be among people, even if you're not necessarily dining with them or touching them, walking down the street, walking in areas where there are shops or areas open is important. Talking to friends over the phone is really key. I've asked all my employees to reach out and call at least one another once a week so they have a connection like this. This kind of connection as well when you're really talking about heartfelt things. And I just want to, you know, tell people to not be afraid to talk about the fact that they're more tired, they're more distressed, they're more depressed, they're more anxious, and they will find out that they are not alone. that we are an entire planet, for the most part, going through this lockdown experience. And we are all hungry for that connection. So first and foremost, please acknowledge and be comfortable sharing that we're in a vulnerable position, whether you're a clinician, a physician, a first responder, or just a mom or a dad, or a teenager, or someone going through school. We're all walking through this together. And if we make the effort to connect and talk about it and say, this is what I'm feeling, how are you doing? You'll find out everybody does that. And when you get on that same wavelength, you'll connect again. So that's another key, is to just be able to share your feelings honestly and be vulnerable.
I think that's awesome. I'm going to turn you over to Dr. Allen now. Thank you for talking with me about
things. You're welcome, Kelly. Thank you so much for what you do with Dr. Allen, and thank you for bringing up the question. That was a great question. How you doing, Dr. Allen?
I'm doing just fine, and I want to give a little background on you. For those of you that are listening, this is a very gifted human being that I've known for how many years?
I counted them up just a moment ago. We're going to be going on 35 years pretty soon. It's a good thing we met when we were teenagers.
And I was your supervisor for your license as a marriage, family, child therapist, right?
You were. You were the first individual that was spiritually placed in my path that would change my life in multiple ways.
And you change lives. You have your own private practice, right?
I do, absolutely, yes.
And what is the number for that private practice?
Well, thank you. That's the number would be the 562 area code, and then it's 810-1040. So that's 562-810-1040.
And you're a professional. You're professional with the, what's the name, U.S.?
So I also, yeah, so in my spare time, actually my full-time other job is, I am, of course, the former director for the Suicide Prevention Center for Los Angeles, where I gained a lot of experience and knowledge working with high-risk people, people who've lost someone to suicide. Currently, I'm also the executive director of one of 11 sites for U.S. Vets. U.S. Vets is a nonprofit. In fact, it's the largest nonprofit in the United States that works on helping homeless veterans. My particular site, which is located downtown Los Angeles, when I'm there, currently we're all working remotely still, works on prevention and early intervention. We want to approach the issue of homelessness among veterans on two sides. One, to take those who've already suffered some losses and have ended up homeless or in danger of becoming homeless, get them into transitional housing, and then support them into full-time permanent housing. And then my operation is really designed to take veterans that are just coming back or transitioning now from the military and make sure we give them the preventative services, good jobs, good employment, housing support, mental health support, to make sure they don't end up homeless. So that's what we do during the week.
How do you do business?
Well, I think part of my story, and I shared this, I think it's on YouTube somewhere in a talk once I did at USC Verdugo Hills Hospital, is I was in a long-term relationship for 15 years with a wonderful man, and we raised a child, developed our careers, built a business, and unbeknownst to me at the time, this poor individual was suffering from what we commonly know now as bipolar, most likely bipolar 2, vacillating between states of depression and manic or mania. The thing that I didn't know, because the depression was very well hidden by this individual, was this individual also was prone to suicide. And we, in retrospect, doing a psychological autopsy after he died, we looked back at the risk factors. He had a previous attempt in his 20s. He'd always suffered from this mood disorder. He had been somewhat isolated and from a pretty traumatic childhood. These kind of combination of factors in some cases can actually change the neurological structure and make someone more prone to likely die by suicide. Now, most everybody, 90% of people don't, but there is a 10% risk factor for those people who suffer by depression or one of the mood disorders. He was one of those individuals. He left the relationship rather abruptly and took his life. I think it's been 11 years ago. I mean, at that point, I was working in the nonprofit hospital world, and I decided 2 years after working through some of the complicated grief associated with that, that I would shift my life to make sure I could understand everything I could about suicide. And so I became the clinical director for the second largest suicide prevention center in the United States, and then ultimately the director, where I trained FBI, SWAT, hospital physicians, therapists on the risk factors and how to recognize it. Worked on a manual for people who are dealing with people who are higher risk, who have made a suicide attempt. So the good news out of all this is there is treatment available, and suicide is absolutely preventable. The unfortunate news is we can't always do that. And those of us who are lost survivors should never take guilt on, because it's part of the grieving process, and know that the best knowledge can't always save an individual who desires to die, but we certainly can do a lot. So at that time I worked there, and then after leaving there, I became the president of the board of directors at the Greater Los Angeles American Foundation for Suicide Prevention chapter here in Los Angeles. So we work on sponsoring International Survivors of the Suicide Loss Day, which is always the Saturday before Thanksgiving. Harry Reid, a former senator in 99, lost his father and designated the Saturday before the holiday as a day of international healing where events could take place. And if people want to find an event in their area, they can go to AFSP.org. AFSP stands for the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention.org, and they can find an event in their area. They're all for free, and they're wonderful healing opportunities.
What is the best number to reach you for private, not the military, not the government, your private practice?
Yeah, thank you again for asking. And thanks for asking all the questions about my personal background and the importance of what I do, Dr. Palin. And it's important for me to share, too, that those of you listening, that Dr. Palin and Allen, and I'm sure you know this, is just an amazing individual, spiritually centered, who is one of the geniuses. I just know that those of you who are listening are gifted to receive that information. If you do want to contact me, my number again is 562 area code. It's 810-1040. It's 810-1040.
All right. I want to thank you for coming on the show, and I hope we can get you back again. Right?
My pleasure, always. I'm happy to come back whenever you'd like. And don't forget, everybody, if you are looking for support, if you are a lost survivor, to go at AFSP, AFSP.org, and find some support, or call the Suicide Prevention Lifeline if you or someone you know is at risk at 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. God bless you, Dr. Pat Allen, and Kelly,
God,
for the amazing
you,
work
Robert
you do.
Storr.
Thank you so much. You have been a gift
Robert.
In my life. Take care, y'all. Have a good evening.
Will do.
Always a pleasure to have you on, Robert. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
Bye-bye now.
Well, bye-bye. So much excellent information from Robert Storr, who is an amazing human being. I hope everybody heard that and got that information and those numbers. Otherwise, you can go and listen to the show when we're done tonight. It'll be uploaded, as it always is, available for you to listen to. And so, Dr. Allen, we yeah. are, here we are. Let me talk to our switchboard, see what's shaking, see if we got some calls coming in, and then we will do what we do.
Good.
I'm so glad that Robert was on before that magic Saturday that's coming.
Isn't that
all right?
You know what? That's a God shot.
That is. Caller, you're live on the air with Dr. Allen. Thanks for being with us tonight. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. And it's kind of a weird coincidence that I have a best friend in my life that her behavior recently has literally become so erratic and irrational that I actually have a very slight concern about her possibly being a suicide candidate in the future. And I actually have some background. So I'm 64. When I was 14, we actually had somebody at the school that I went to, one of the administration people, had a teenager commit suicide, and she ended up gathering like 40 of the students and putting us through a training program.
Are you going to share your concerns with her?
So I've actually started a letter to her.
Good.
I'm using your high by format.
Excellent.
Because it's not like a normal, I mean, most of the high by letters that you talk about in your format.
No, I can mold it into shape. Paragraph one, everything you like about her.
Right, so I got that already.
Paragraph two, the pain you feel when you hear her negative attitudes and situations, the pain you feel.
Okay.
And then paragraph three and four would be asking her if there's anything you can do to help her, listen to her, talk with her, whatever, because you don't want to ignore your intuition. Men run their lives from intuition. Women run their lives from instinct. And so you've told me that you sensed something intuitively about a friend of yours. And I'm saying that the high by letter is simply a structure of concern to somebody you're afraid you're losing. And in this case, you're listening and talking to me after listening and, not talking, but Robert Storr about suicide. So please write the letter and give it to her so that she knows you're available to her. Will you do that, please?
Well, yeah, yes, I'm going to do that. Looking for any polishing advice here. She is so reactive and so...
Dear, I'm willing for you to call me. If you call my office, I am willing to listen to your letter and critique it for appropriateness. But right now...
No, you can reach out and make it, you can reach out and make an appointment at info@drpatallen.com.
That's
okay.
Right.
Okay, and I actually got a response back from Sue. So I sent Sue an email earlier in the week and got a response back. So, you know, the email address, there's already a paper trail, so to speak, on the email.
Good. And okay. I would be more than willing to critique whatever you write her if that's what you wish. But I expect that your care and love of her will help you write the right letter. Okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thank you, caller. Okay. Let's see what we've got shaking and going on here. I'm going to have some more calls come in, I believe. And we're just waiting for our wonderful Rona at the switchboard to hook us up. Dr. Allen, you got plans for Thanksgiving?
No. Fooled you.
Nah.
I imagine. My oldest daughter.
Hello.
We've got our caller.
Okay. Anyway, she and I are going to have a fine time.
Oh, that's good. That's perfect. Caller, you're live with Dr. Allen. Do you have a question?
Yes. Hi, Dr. Allen. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling. Without your calls, there's no show.
Thanks. So there was a gentleman. He was 46 years old. He was dating me, and I am 33 years old. I had a session with you.
How old is he? Wait a minute. How old is
46.
He?
46.
Okay. Go ahead.
And I had a session with you, and I told him after talking to you that I will not touch you sexually until your divorce filed. And I will be your social companion. 2 days, he called me and he said that I disturb you and I broke the magic between us. And I will take 5 to 6 months to take care of my divorce. And after that, I haven't heard back from him. So my question is that what do I have to do? Do I have to start the 8 weeks or just wait for 5 or 6 months?
I Can want you help to, me? Have you ever heard me teach Where Did You Go?
Yes.
Well, how long has it been since you had any contact with him?
And now it has been 3 weeks that I haven't heard back
perfect.
From
him. That's perfect. You can write him a note, a message, a text, or whatever, and say,
yes.
I enjoyed knowing you when however long you figure it out. Where did you go?
Oh, okay.
You see, because you've had experience with him, did you feel wanted? Did you feel loved? Did he seem
yes.
to enjoy himself?
Yes, very much. I had a very good time with him.
Then I want you to use that as a foundation of the question, where did you go? We had a good time.
Okay, so I have to say, I enjoyed knowing you for 1 month. And you said we had a good time. Where did you go?
That's it. That's it.
Okay.
Do you know his address? Do you know how to get a piece of paper to him?
Yes, I have him on Facebook.
Okay, good. So wherever you can contact him, would you please give him that message?
Yes, yes.
Good. Have a great time.
Yes, and I have one more question, Dr. Allen. What's the difference between intuition and instinct?
Oh, great question. Well, men, I'm a nerd. You know what a nerd is?
Yes.
It's a person who binges on information.
Mm-hmm.
And here's the information, scientific. I absolutely adore science. I take the science magazine and I eat it up every time I get a copy, and I love it. It's a good magazine and it's all science. Anyway, men are born with 21 genes attached to their sperm cells, which enhance their ability to be intuitive. A man's intuition really helps his left lobe, which is the thinking, communicating lobe. Men are very good with intuition, information before education. Women, on the other hand, we have a larger corpus callosum between our right feeling and left thinking, talking lobe. And because of that, women can drive men who are right-handed crazy. Because right-handed men have a smaller corpus callosum and they're either thinking and talking or they're feeling. But they don't mix the two. That's why they make great soldiers, great paramedics, great police, because they can be feeling 1 minute and thinking the next minute. So the difference is women are very affected by their neurotransmitters. That's the electrical system through the nervous system. And there's three neurotransmitters, which are big effect. There are a lot of them, but these are the biggies. Dopamine. Dopamine is an upper. Two dopamine are sex and money. So the use and misuse of sex and money really produces norepinephrine. That's no epinephrine. Epinephrine is an upper. You used to be able to buy it in a pharmacy until they realized it was very hard on the heart and you could blow your heart to bits with misused epinephrine. So there is a production in the body called the norepinephrine to keep you cool, to come down. And so it will rain on your parade when your parade is a hurricane. So that's dopamine, norepinephrine, and serotonin. Serotonin is a tranquilizer type production that helps you handle stress. So dopamine, norepinephrine, and serotonin is there are three neurotransmitters that help us live. And when you go to a psychiatrist, they may give you medicine to upper and downer your neurotransmitters so that you live comfortably. Okay? So did you get your questions answered?
Yes. Yes. Thank you so much, Dr. Allen.
Call again.
Thanks. Have a good day. Yes,
good
bye.
Luck with your with your where did you go?
Yes, thanks.
Good.
Thank you, caller.
We have anybody else?
Oh yeah, we do. We definitely have got some people waiting in our queue, and we've got Ronan getting for us all lined up today. He's the best.
What was that?
Please leave your message for 57531.
Hello.
Oh, I'm here. I just somehow I got bumped, but I'm back.
Okay.
Yeah, so callers, when you get a call from a number you don't recognize, it's probably us calling you back. Hi, caller, you're live on the hour. Do you have a question?
Yes, I do. Let me turn my radio off.
Thank you.
Turn your radio off.
Okay. I want to ask, you know how Pat always says the only way you know yourself, you love yourself or anyone else is, are the commitments you're willing to make and keep?
That is something, God, I love that. My brain really, you know what creativity is? It's taking complicated things and making them simple so everybody understands. Anyway,
okay.
I like that. I created that, and I love it, and it's in every book I write. Which, by the way, I want to advertise. The textbook for me is A Man's World and a Woman's Universe. I reread it recently, and I looked deeply for mistakes and omissions, and I didn't find any. So I'm now calling it my textbook.
Oh, okay. I've already read that. I've read all your books. So what about narcissists? Can they make and keep agreements? Or are Okay.
Narcissists can be very normal if they don't have any children, they never marry, and they have no real emotional attachment to anyone. They're free spirits. They want to be respected and cherished.
Okay.
Which means whoever's with them has got to be a zero.
That's what I think. Yeah.
Now, here's what I'm going to share with you. A narcissist with another narcissist that likes it often marry. Actors and actresses do it all the time.
Right, right. So two narcissists get along with each other, but somebody that isn't a narcissist is going to have problems because they're going to know.
No, they're going to be a zero. Respect and cherishing, and the people that are with them that are not narcissistic are zeros. One minute you have to respect the narcissist, the next minute you're getting punished for not cherishing them. That's how they are. When they see, they get lonely too, so they have relationships. But if you're not careful and you're with the narcissist, you basically, there's a book I think is Walking on Eggshells. If you are with a narcissist and you're not a narcissist,
right,
you're not equal.
Right.
And
there
are codependent people. See, there's three ways to relate. Convenient, where you're both equal, you're both narcissists, or codependent. One of you is a 10 and the other one is a 0,
okay,
and you're codependent. And the third one is a covenant. You can marry like this. A covenant is where one person is designated the major respectable moneymaker,
mm-hmm,
and the other person is cherished as the homemaker. There used to be 4 states in our culture that had legal covenants. And you got married if you wanted to in Louisiana, Arizona, Minnesota, and Michigan. But now the only state that's doing covenant with marriage is Louisiana. And they have to sign 2 certificates, one to be married and one to be either the breadwinner or the homemaker. The homemaker cannot work outside of the home. They can work inside the home. And the breadwinner has to be responsible for the bills of the family. Isn't that something?
Well, yeah, okay. But can a narcissist, are they afraid of intimacy too? Real intimacy? Can they be intimate in a relationship, or are they
as long as they're with another narcissist, or they're with a zero that likes it, codependent relationship.
Okay. So in other words, if the other person's not a narcissist, they're going to clash. And if they stand up for themselves,
I'm going to tell you something. We therapists make a lot of money off of codependent people.
Okay.
See, you're supposed to be interdependent.
But why if you're in a relationship with a narcissist, you might have to go to a psychiatrist to get everything straightened out.
Let's put it down as you better go to a psychiatrist or at least a marriage, family, child therapist. Because it's hard to be a zero. One minute they want to be respected, one minute they want to be cherished, and the rest of the minutes they want both at the same time.
Well, are they able to be helped? Because a lot of literature I read says they're hopeless. Then I saw one doctor.
I got news for you. They believe in one word. You know what it is?
I.
Next. Next.
Next.
I think we're having some experiences in our culture today with the narcissist, I think.
Right, but that's the extreme version. There's a lot of people that have...
I got news for you. I'm telling you, even a minimum version of narcissism can drive you cuckoo.
Oh, I agree. I agree, because I'm going through that now. But I've also listened
to you. Are you the true 10 or are you the broken zero?
The one he's trying to break into a zero.
But you're not going there.
No, I'm refusing to, and I'm calling him on everything, and we're having
You're going to use my tools, right?
Well, I'm trying to, Pat, but like a lot of times it's like so frustrating that you just want to throw your hands up and give up. But I really care about this man.
How long have you dated him?
For 8 or 9 months. But one thing about it, Pat, you know how you say that, see, a narcissist too, they can have they're nice to you when they really like you. It's like they can make you.
Narcissists know how to be 10 cherishing and 10 respecting. If they want
very charming.
From you, they get it. All right?
Yes. Right.
Okay.
So
I think you should read
in a relationship with them,
eggshells.
Right. Unless you are seeing a therapist and they're trying to work out what the differences are between you.
That's exactly right. That's what I do for a living.
Okay.
Okay. Do you treat narcissists? Of course I treat narcissists. Anybody that admits they're a narcissist is already over the fence. I can work with them fine.
Okay, good. That's all I wanted to know. Thank you.
Good. You called me before, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
Good. Well, I'm glad. You're gay, right?
Thank you.
That's fine. Call again.
All right. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, caller. Okay.
Was that cute or was that cute?
They're adorable. We've got some great people calling. I'm really glad that our first caller is reaching out with that letter for his to his friend. That seems really amazing. So we've got another call coming, and we have
okay. Let's go for it.
We're just waiting for it to get connected here. And the weather's probably clear where you are, but where I am, it is storming like nobody's business.
Oh, is that right? By the way, there's a book. There's a book about narcissists.
Please leave your message for 5.
Narcissists.
Oh. And say that again one more time.
Sociopaths. Yeah, I heard that. It's a book about women who marry narcissists who are also very often sociopaths or psychopaths. I'm looking for it in my bookcase, but I don't want to waste time looking for it.
All right.
So with that in mind.
Hello.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we've got a caller.
Hi.
Hello there.
And do you have a
hi, yes, I do. Okay. So I decided to take a lover. And
you're doing what?
I had decided to take a lover.
Oh,
a couple
we've
of
talked,
months ago.
Haven't we?
Yes, we have.
Okay. So you may not want a lover, you may want a husband, but you're going to settle for a lover?
Well, I figured I could have a lover while I was searching for my husband.
Oh, I see. Now, do you remember what I say? I'm not a moralist and I'm not a therapist. I'm a therapist, I'm not a moralist. Here's my direction for wanting a lover. It must be somebody that you've had a relationship with, including sex, and it didn't build anything.
Oh.
And the reason for that is you don't know any human being until you've been there 4 seasons. A summer person isn't like a winter person or an autumn person. Every season, we even have a defect in therapy called seasonal affect disorder, which is a real moneymaker. It's like you're bored in the summer and you're upper when it's snowing. So the seasons of the year dictate your sanity. Do you see what I'm saying? Okay.
Yeah.
So with that in mind, you've got to know a lover for a year, the ups and the downs, but it wasn't buildable. Maybe you were a mistress and they were married and they promised they'd leave, but they didn't leave. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So the first, I hate to say rule, I don't want to say rule, scratch rule. A lover must not be a brand new person, because the chances of you producing oxytocin and bonding to this human being, and it takes 2 years to detox off of that stuff. The same as a death or a suicide or whatever. It takes 2 years.
So I hear you. Yeah, this was a completely new person. And I totally like him.
You know what that's called?
What is it called?
A trick.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Especially if you get dinner or a little money. You're marketing sex. Often referred to, I think one of the cleanest contracts sexually is between the prostitute and the trick. Do you know why? They both know what they're doing, and they hammer it out.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah, this didn't happen here.
Prostitute? What?
No, no, I don't want to.
So, what are you going to do?
Well, I really like this person, so I told him
The word is lust. L-U-S-T. Like, love, and lust.
Well, I think I actually do. I both like and lust for him, because before we had intercourse, we had a period of maybe about a month. Like, this, okay, so I messed it up, Dr. Allen. But so,
that's, you know what you just told me? You've told me one of the basic laws of being in love is making friends. I'm afraid it works at the office when the secretary and the boss go off together and the divorce, blah, blah. In other words, you can misuse a friendship too. Mm-hmm. Every time you meet a new man or a new woman, you have to decide, do I want sex with that person or don't I? It's a decision, the newcomer decision.
I see.
You had, why didn't it turn into a relationship?
Well, that's where I am now, because I think we get along really well, but I realized.
Have you had intercourse with him?
Yes.
Was it contractual or just a trick?
I think it was just a trick.
Okay, but I explained the difference. I'm not judging them, I'm just explaining them.
Yeah, I think it was just a trick. And so I felt uncomfortable, like I felt myself developing feelings. So I told him this morning that I won't be coming over to his place anymore.
Yay.
And that I have, thank you. I felt very good. I told him I really enjoy his company. But I realized that I like to have consistency and continuity, and I really want a committed relationship. So I'm, I'm not asking him to change his lifestyle, but I'm not going to be coming to his place anymore.
You want to be a boyfriend, girlfriend at least.
Yeah. And I tell him that I'm
gracious.
Thank you. Yeah.
I don't mind whatever people want to do sexually, as long as it's not child abuse, elder abuse, or disabled adult abuse. The government doesn't care who you have sex with unless it's rape. Then they arrest you and put you in jail. So I'm open to you using and doing whatever you want, as long as you and your partner have mutually agreed to it.
Right.
You see?
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay.
So the part I'm a bit confused about now is that I told him, in my mind, it was dating. I told him that I would still be happy to go out with him, but I just won't be in with him and I won't be having intercourse with him. So he's still texting me and I feel a little uncomfortable because I'm scared that I will like still have the emotional attachment if I'm talking to him regularly.
Okay, you've had the intercourse and you want more from him?
Yes.
And that, is he married or single?
He's single, but he's also dating.
He's dating. He's free to date you.
Yes.
And he's dated you, and you've had sex with him. What's the problem? You're lovers.
Yeah, because the emotional aspect, I fear that if I continue to see him, that I don't know, does he like, he still gets my company for free.
Well, your company, do you want a monogamous, continuous, long-term relationship with him?
I am open to it. I'm not sure if I like want it yet.
Well, that's what it sounds like you're saying to him. I don't want to have intercourse with you anymore unless we're boyfriend and girlfriend at least.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying to me?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Okay. But you haven't talked about it. How long have you known him?
2 months.
2 months. So you're still in the perfect period, the first 3 months, where you're fantasizing the future, and he's going to leave his wife and all kinds of good things. Do you see?
Yeah, yeah.
So what I want you to do is decide here, do you want to work on getting into a boyfriend, girlfriend, monogamous, continuous, long-term relationship?
Yes.
Stop having intercourse with him unless he gives you sexual and social monogamy, a contract for dating you at least weekly, and long-term goals. Are you trying to marry him or trying to, what are you doing with him?
I mean, I don't know about that yet, but I want that to be on the table if, you know, if things
okay,
work out.
Okay,
so
you're open to marriage. So right now you're just working on mating with him.
Right.
Don't live with him unless you're engaged to him, because that's a free marriage.
Yeah.
But not for him. For you. Your body will
right.
bond unless he's 50, 60 years old. When men go on estrogen, they bondable. Young women and old men are very, that's the reason they fit together. They're very bondable.
Oh,
young men and old women are not that bondable. That's why they call older women cougars, because they want mm-hmm. young guys. And young guys love older women because they have jobs, they pay their own bills, they're sexy. Benjamin Franklin wrote a letter to his son when he got married or getting married. He said, marry an older woman. They appreciate you more. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The bodies are getting older, but it's relatively the same, except they appreciate you more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So how old are you?
37.
You're 37. You're not ready for perimenopause yet. And how old is this guy?
44.
He's not at periandropause. That's their version of menopause. It's when they stop producing their testosterone and they switch over and start producing or using the estrogen in the body. Grandpa's nicer than dad and grandma's meaner than mom.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a correct statement?
Mm-hmm. Much.
That's
yeah, very.
Because grandpa's is on estrogen, grandma's on testosterone and progesterone. Do you see what I mean? Nature comes in all the time. Science comes in. So if you want to build a relationship with him, stop having sex intercourse with him and tell him, I have too many feelings for you to have casual sex. I can date you, but I can't have intercourse, oral, anal, or vaginal, unless I'm at least your monogamous girlfriend with the possibility of marriage and hopefully at least mating. Want to do that?
I do. My follow-up question is, I know that he's dating someone that he seems to like a lot because Saturday nights always seem to be off limits. So do you think it's like inappropriate for me to continue to have like a non-sexual relationship with him knowing that he's so into someone else?
No. Is he married?
No.
If he's not married, you're just one of the numbers. Nature has not, God has not built human beings for monogamy. Men are more polyamorous than women, slightly. Like, men are 50-50, women are like 45. We all have to decide. You see, mating in marriage is built for women and children. Churches and governments are set up to protect women and children from men's natural nature to have a harem of women, not just one.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the pornography out there is for men working on being monogamous with their lover and enjoying the virtual world that's not in a body.
Right.
So your loyalty to his date is not necessary. You have a right to flirt with him. You have a right to see what you can do, as long as he's not married.
Right.
If you did flirt with him, you have a right to mistressing. You know, there's all kinds of ways to be. So do you want to build for the future? Or do you want to just be in the harem today?
No, I definitely don't want to be in the harem today.
Well, then why don't you tell him, I enjoyed us as a sexual couple, but I have too many feelings for you. And I don't want to fall in love with you. It takes years to get over people.
Yeah.
You see, men don't marry vaginas. They marry virtue. They play with vaginas.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's why men say this famous line, it wasn't serious, it was just sex.
Yeah.
Women have difficulty with just sex. Women like to make love. If you've ever had sex with a man, you can tell by their touch that they're not making love. They're just patting your body, you know, to get in. But when a man touches you, and that's a good book, Ashley Montague, Touching, a man making love to you, you feel it, right or not?
Yeah. See? Very much so.
So people say, well, we had sex. Well, what you had, dogs had sex. Humans are built to make love and or have sex. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. I do.
Sex addicts don't make love. They just have sex. And it's wildly passionate. And then it gets boring and goodbye. So what are you going to do?
I'm going to continue to talk to him and see him, just not inside, not going to have intercourse with him anymore, and let him know that I have too many feelings for him to have intercourse, but I would still love to see him.
That's just fine. That's just fine. Good luck.
Thank you.
The only way you know you love yourself or anybody else are the commitments you're willing to make and keep. And that especially means anything to do with money and anything to do with sex.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
All right. I've got it.
Good, girl.
Thank you. Have a great night.
You too.
Thank you, caller.
Thanks.
All right. Excellent, Dr. Allen. I love that. That was really informative. And that's another thing that happens, you know. You think you want to take a lover, and then all of a sudden, all of a sudden that
Do you know of any other radio show that talks as much sex as ours?
Probably not. Caller, you're live on Dr. Allen. Do you have a question?
Yeah. Hi, Kelly and Dr. Pat. I spoke to Dr. Pat maybe a couple weeks ago, and she helped me talk to my boyfriend about getting the security I need by him putting me on social media, and that didn't work out, and I ended up staying, and I want to break up with him because it's becoming too painful, and I can't. Even if I use the tools, for example, I was like, hey, when would it be convenient to talk about like our schedule of when I visit you? And I was very positive and trying to tell him, and he immediately was like, stop. He's like, not wanting to, like, I don't know. I just don't feel like he really wants to build anything with me.
That's right. He doesn't. He wants to use you. He wants to have sex with you. But he doesn't want to make love to you, because making love includes honor. Honor.
Right.
Physically, mentally, and emotionally.
Well, right. And
what you say to him is you use one of the tools. Are you going to have a date with him?
I don't want to do it in person. I don't want to see him anymore. I saw him last night, and I felt...
Oh, I see. So you've already told him something. What did you tell him last night?
No, I didn't tell him anything last night, but it's just that anytime that I start to say anything about my feelings, like try to like make an appointment to tell him something about my feelings, he gets annoyed. And then, but of course he can get annoyed as much as he wants. He can do whatever, and it's fine. And
you're in a codependent narcissistic relationship.
Yes. Okay. Then I don't want it anymore. Yeah.
Has he asked you, have you another scheduled date?
I mean, possibly on Friday he'll ask me if I want to go, but the thing is that I've been, because of all this, I keep getting like him frustrated. Like I'll do something that like, oh, you're moody again, and it's just because I shouldn't be in that relationship anymore. Like I keep feeling bad, and I act out.
Why not just send him a note, a text?
Right. Well, I think I want to do that today. I don't.
You want to do a high bye letter? Do you want to do a big one?
I guess that would be good if I. I mean, we did start out well, and I don't want it to get worse. I like him as a person. I just don't think in a relationship we're good.
Lovers cannot be friends until they have new lovers.
Oh, right.
Lovers
I won't be his friend. No,
be
no.
Friends. What?
Yeah, I won't do that. I wouldn't do that.
Okay.
I hear you.
So with that in mind, have you told him goodbye or not?
No, I haven't told him goodbye yet.
Do you want to do it with a letter, with an email, with a text? What do you want to do with it?
Yeah, I'll do it over Messenger. I'll do it over text.
Okay, text.
Mm-hmm.
Dear so-and-so, thank you for the fun we've had, but I'm not getting what I need.
Okay. So that's good, because you know what? That I didn't want to over-explain, because I think that he really wants to know, and he already knows, and I had a bad feeling.
You've
when,
given him all of the boundaries. He's
right,
got to
right,
offer the boundaries. Now, you know, when you get that to him, he's got 8 weeks to give you what you want.
Correct. Yes.
You do know that.
Yes, I do. Uh-huh. I've been listening to
all
you
right.
for a long time.
So that means do not start another sexual relationship with somebody else during the 8 weeks, or you'll be ending up with two guys.
Because I'm recording it now, and
okay.
I'm so like emotional.
Dear
yeah.
so-and-so, we won't even use names. Dear so-and-so,
right.
but uses names. Thank mm-hmm. you so much for the fun we've had. But I'm not getting what I need.
That's perfect.
Goodbye.
Yeah. That's perfect. Thank you. That feels better.
Welcome.
Okay. Thank you, Dr. Pat. Bye, Kelly.
Bye.
Bye, hon. Have a great evening. Thanks for calling. Okay. So, check in with our switchboard, see if we got more calls. And he's working on it. Okay. So, you were saying earlier, where did you go? And I get a lot of new questions about that, especially now it seems like people are wanting to connect more. So I have a couple of questions here that are like pretty much the same question. Like, how do you determine if that's the appropriate new tool to use? And could you
Which
give an example,
tool?
Doctor?
Which Powell? New tool?
Where did you go?
Oh, where did you go? I will tell that in great detail. If
Perfect.
You've had a delightful date and he said, we've got to do this again. I'll call you next week. The requirement is, it isn't, you know, you saw him at a something or other and you didn't really date. And you said, where did you go? That's chasing him. And I have no problem as long as you want to be the man. That means you've got to date him. You've got to pay for the dates. You've got to be the cougar. If you have a good date with a man and both of you enjoyed yourselves and he said, we've got to do this in some, he'll say it like, let's do it. Let's take a hike next week or something that's future oriented. Within
right.
the next week, at the end of the next, say you dated him on Friday. Coming up on Thursday of next week, you said you had a great date, you know, that you extol the virtues of that date, but never heard. You see, when that women's group, when women started coming out of the woodwork with their anger at being used as sex objects by men, and then retaliating against the men by outing them, and they lose their jobs, particularly, which is
oh,
okay.
the Me Too.
The Me Too movement.
The Me Too.
Right. that for a while there, when it was really hot and bothered, you know, there were lots of stories on every form of communication. Men, one day I had five women call and tell me that the men that they thought were going to date them didn't call. Well, it came to find out that from talking to men that I work with, the men became afraid of their enthusiasm on that exciting mm-hmm. date they had, and they thought it would be misunderstood as sexually abusive. So they dropped the ball. When a woman knows that he and she both had a good time, in fact, it was so good that it kind of overwhelmed him. Do you see what I'm saying, Kelly?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I definitely see.
Okay. That's, I'm just using you as my person.
Of course.
Then,
well, I am.
She then helps him feel comfortable by saying, "We had a good time. Where did you go?" It's got to have foreplay the week before. You can't do it like five right. weeks later.
It's right,
gotta be
exactly.
within the next week. Like, if you dated
okay,
him on Friday,
so they're,
you'd expect him to set the date up by Thursday.
So they're asking, they're sending a message right now, and they're asking, does this also include if you're Zoom dating?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, that's really informative. And like I said, I get a lot of hits about that right now because I think people are really wanting to make contact. And they are wondering, where did you go? So,
I'm going to tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
That whether we hate it or not, this shutting down of closeness is forcing us into building friendships on Zooms. Do you see what I mean?
I do. I do. Now, this is an interesting question that we have from our Facebook people. This question is, I'm going back into the dating world during this COVID, and so I'm creating my online profile. How should I make it be stand out and interesting when I know that we probably won't be meeting in person, but only on Zoom? And I am an executive, but I don't necessarily want to advertise that. What should I say, Dr. Allen?
What should she say for what?
When you set up a profile on one of those dating websites,
you
set up
that,
like almost like a bio.
I want to tell you, I have a client, a woman, who has set up a situation with a man in which they exchange ideas, topping, like if he writes one about, you know, it's like taking care of yourself, little bits of stuff. Do you know what that's
mm-hmm.
called? That's an emotional relationship. Do you know that whether people know it or not, there is more intimacy in an emotional exchange of ideas, which you call a friendship, but they're talking about love and how to be in love, but they're just sharing it together without being in love at that moment, because they're not meeting each other. And they don't know whether the chemistry is going to work or it's not going to work. But in fact, one lady today said to me, I've learned she's very masculine. Her father raised her to be an athlete, and she's this and she's that. And she really gets violently angry with men that don't date her the way she wants, which means she's the man.
Oh, definitely.
And she said something to me today in a little session on the phone. She said, I realized I drove that man away by speaking from my brain. I'm going to speak from my heart from now on.
Wow. Wow. That's really something. And
totally something. And I was just, in fact, here I am sharing it. I didn't create it. She created it in front of me, and I'm plagiarizing it for the rest of you.
I think that's one of the issues we have right now in this sort of competitive thing in the world with, instead of complementary behavior, we have this competitive behavior, which is great if you have a business partner, but I don't think it's so great in a romantic or a relationship that you hope.
Not at all.
Often.
Remember, what is the first question I teach? Do you want to be cherished or respected first? I want both.
You know what I think? I think it's interesting because a lot of people, they ask me, how do I know? How do I know what I want? And I'm like, that confuses me because I think, and I don't know if it's because they, like you said, have been raised in a way where they're masculine.
They've
and so
raised.
It's.
I'm telling you, in my book, Getting to I Do, and in my book, Man's World, Woman's Universe, I remind people that are reading it that you basically have to know whether you want to present yourself as someone who wants to feel good, to do good, or you want
right.
to be do good, to feel good. You see?
Yes.
And so you're kind of, if you want to feel good to do good, you're going to be sensuous and sexual.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to cook together. I like to, you see what I mean?
Right. She doesn't want to necessarily make herself, you know, say what she does. Like I see a lot of, a lot of girls come to me and say, well, I do this and I have that up on my profile. And I'm like, that's great if you want to be the masculine energy. But if you're trying to be the feminine energy, you might want to dial that back. I have one girl that I counsel that is a medical doctor. And
right on.
She always puts up that she's a doctor. And I said, you might want to just change that you work in the medical field.
You
and
got
she's
that.
Like, but
I was
why?
Just gonna, that's the one that I created and you're using. Kelly.
Exactly. And then she says, why? And I said, because you know, it's like the old, and they've made 100 movies with this plot line. You know, rich person doesn't want to be loved for their money, wants to make sure that the person that falls in love with them is in love with them and not their money. I said, that's the same concept. You know, I said, and it's a role reversal because, you know, back in the olden days, what was it? Oh, marry a doctor. So I said, what's different? You know, just say you're in the medical
field. That's right. That's right. So respect is productivity, making money. Harvard did a study in the 90s, and they asked 10,000 people that were on campus, students and whoever, why did you mate or marry? Two-thirds of the men said for sensuous and sexual stability. one third of the men said for status and financial security. I married her because her dad owned so-and-so, and I knew that I could be in that company. Two-thirds of women mate and marry for status and for financial stability. One-third of women mate and marry for sensuous and sexual. But when you get to be 52 years to 62 years old, and your testosterone is going down, and your progesterone is going up, because when men get older, they go over on the feminine side hormonally, and the women go over on the masculine side. So you've got to watch out how you speak, because it's going to demonstrate whether you want to be respected or cherished. Here's what I hear in the office. All he does is talk about what he did and what he does. He doesn't even care about what I do. And I said, lucky you. He wants to be respected for do good, and you want to be respected for do good. I guarantee you this is not going anywhere. I need one Fred Astaire and one Ginger Rogers. There are three dances. There's discoing. You can't even tell who they're dancing with. There's slam dancing. You throw yourself off of a balcony and let them catch you. Or you waltz. I teach waltzing verbally.
Yes.
Those are what my five tools are all about. If you want to be respected, don't ever ask him or her what they think. Always tell them, I think this, I want that, my opinion is here. But they say to you, how do you feel about it? And if you want to be cherished, always ask them what they think, what they want, their opinion, their suggestions. Do you see?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
The left lobe harbors the Broca, B-R-O-C-A. The Broca is named after Philip Paul Broca, a French doctor who had a patient that ran a rod through his skull and didn't kill him, but he could speak language. When they do stroke investigations, they notice the jaw drops and they can't speak. A Broca is named after this doctor who, do you know, National Geographic, which I don't have in front of me, and I don't want to take the time to get it, that had a glass jar that Dr. Broca put the brain of one of the can't-speak people in and gave it to a university that eventually did an autopsy of what the brain did. This, and Broca, the doctor, was in the 1800s. The brain came down through the university to the current status, and it's pictured in the National Geographic on brains. That's, I mean, I could dig it up.
That's amazing.
Maybe I won't dig it up. What?
That's amazing.
I'll dig. I mean, so next week, I'll tell you what the magazine is. Okay? So here's...
That sounds awesome.
I teach waltzing, but working is discoing.
Yeah.
Screwing around is codependent. That's the one where you're really only having sex. You're not making love.
Right.
Sex is everything you taste, touch, smell, see, and hear. Everything.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, I do. I do. And, okay. And I think that some people get that mix up on the whole intercourse versus sex situation. You sex know, I don't think
foreplay.
That they're...
Sex is foreplay.
Mm-hmm.
Making love is a God moment. When you're making love, do you know that back in the ancient times, women died of pregnancy. They died of childbirth.
Yeah.
We're lucky that any of us, if it weren't for men figuring out ways to give us babies, you know, we wouldn't have us. We wouldn't be here. So making love is when you can create another human being. That's a God moment.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
And there is no sex that can overplay making love. But making love always has to start with that perfect 3-month period of fantasizing the perfection of the feelings you're having with this human being. Then the second 3 months happens.
Mm-hmm.
And he farts at your mother's birthday party.
Oh, yeah.
And he says it was funny. That's
right.
When you get to start learning how to communicate and negotiate, not intimidate and not seduce with guilt and shame. I can't take you to my mother's house. You farted at her birthday party.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And guilt and shame is what you've been taught to expect. I can't marry him. He's too short. Oh, short is now, you know, he's 10 years older than I am. The Aztecs made a calendar about going around the sun. Are you telling me you're going to marry a man or not marry a man because of the times he went around the sun? Not chemistry? Chemistry is chemistry. You can't give it. You either got it or you don't. But if you've got it, you've got the permanent glue of mankind. If it weren't for chemistry, none of us would be here.
Well, I think one of the things that's interesting that you talk about, I think one thing that you talk about that's interesting is that if you are so worried about these social constructs, then obviously the chemistry isn't there. So, you know, kick rocks, move on and go forward, because
that's
what I'm looking at. I'm saying, like, these social constructs are so important, then the chemistry just is not there. It must not be. Because if you have chemistry for somebody, I mean, I've seen people, like, literally, you could almost say they would crawl through flaming rocks and broken glass to be with the person that they have that chemistry for. So
that's right.
I don't know.
Right.
Without
chemistry, you can do about 3 years. Attraction and joy, boring. Without chemistry.
Yeah.
Chemistry helps people stay together when they don't like each other, which is normal.
Right.
The first 3 months in a relationship are friend building. The second 3 months is not destroying the relationship, but going into negotiating in the third 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
Raise your right hand, Kelly.
Oh, got a caller on, Dr. Allen.
What?
Hey, we got a caller. Oh, we have a caller on, Dr. Allen.
Let's call her.
Yeah.
Let's call.
Caller, you're live with Dr. Allen. Hi.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. Dr. Pat, my question is this. Okay.
So I think I've always been in a codependent relationship with men where I'm the zero and they're the 10. And,
are you the 10 or the zero?
I'm the zero. I'm a big fat zero in all my relationships so far.
All right.
And that's why I'm eagerly learning your tools.
Have you read Getting to I Do?
Many times, yes.
Okay, so you know my work. You're not brand new.
No. I've called you lots of times, too.
Okay, good. Thank you.
So my last relationship, I followed you and did your tools. I got engaged before I moved in. I had the ring before I had sex.
Did you have chemistry?
Yes. And so this is my question. So guys that pursue me are always lusty, and I don't know that I've ever been in a relationship where I've been made love to. It always feels like lust from the guy. And my question was, like, are all guys pursuing women for lust and trying to get away with just having sexual relationships? Or do I get involved with the wrong guy to begin with? Or is it the possibility, like, using your work?
Do you let his penis in your mouth, anus, or vagina before you know you're in love with him?
I don't know how I know that I'm in love with him, but no, I didn't do that before I had a ring.
That's okay. So, but the ring is this practical statement, but the chemistry is chemistry. Did you have chemistry with the man that gave you the ring to get into your body?
Yes, lots of chemistry.
Okay, so did it fall apart?
Yes.
Why?
Tell me why it fell apart. I with your working with you, I learned he was passive aggressive and he cheated on me and he was dishonest.
So what you're saying is he was not compatible. You found out you couldn't negotiate with him. See, the first 3 months is perfect. The second 3 months are imperfect. The third 3 months, you're negotiating time, space, money, and play. And that includes all the things you don't like. And the fourth three months, you say, he's 51% valuable. I'm going to keep him or her because I can't replace it because I've known him a year. And by George, we have chemistry and enough compatibility that we can build something.
So you're right. We didn't have compatibility.
Well, you've got to have that.
So if I get involved in the next relationship, you think that, I mean, I'm just wondering, how do you know you're compatible without interviewing?
How do you know? I do not give women any permission to interview a man.
I don't want to, but I also want to know, how can I screen guys that they're not just going to throw a ring at me? And, you know, I don't know. I just...
Wait a minute. I'm talking about chemistry. You're talking about negotiating rings.
Well, yeah.
I want you to be with the man that you're afraid of because of the chemistry you have for him. Afraid.
And what if, there's a guy I feel attracted to, but I don't know if I feel afraid of him.
Then you don't respect him.
I feel like the guys I do respect, I don't have that much chemistry for.
I understand that, sir.
Or maybe that's because I'm afraid they won't like me because they don't come off as lusty.
Do you understand what you're saying? Chemistry is not negotiable. You feel chemistry.
Can you feel it through Zoom?
Yes, you can. You can't tell. It's a composite of a human being that's talking to you, that if he's chemically attracted to you, you'll naturally talk as if you're emotionally connected.
Oh, well,
I hear that you're negotiating intellectually for a secure status relationship.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, that sounds right. I'm trying to be more selective so I can go through what I went through.
That's codependent. I want you only to date men you're chemically afraid of because you feel the power of the chemistry. And they know you know.
I feel like I've done that my whole life and I end up in a codependent role.
Time space, well, that's chapter 14 in my book.
Right, I did
chapter
my best
14.
With the I did my best with the last guy I was with, but he was not willing to negotiate with me.
That's a sign he's not chemically. Look, men will do just about anything to be with the woman they're chemically attracted to, including screw around, unless he had chemistry for his wife.
Wait, could you repeat that? I didn't understand it.
What I'm saying is, men pick with their eyes. They see a beautiful woman, it turns them on, and they go, oh, I really want that. But they are so in love with their wife, they can't use the other woman.
Yeah, well, my partner was not in love with me enough to not use other people, so I don't want to go through that again. But
then would you please have chemistry for the man that you're going to negotiate before he gets into your body? Chapter 14.
I feel like I did have chemistry for him. I mean, he didn't have it.
Did he have it for you?
If by chemistry you mean lust, yes, we had a lot of that.
Okay, you had a lot of that. Then what fell apart?
Yeah. He wanted to have chemistry with other people that I didn't feel good about.
Well, darling, he didn't want monogamy.
Right.
You've got to have monogamy sexually and socially. He can't be putting himself back on stage admitting that he's single. That's a favorite game today. Be monogamous sexually for the disease factor, but put yourself right back up there as if you're single.
I was just hoping to, like, I want the chemistry and the lust, but I also want the monogamy. And I'm afraid if I put myself back out there, I'm going to have the exact same thing, because that's what I've always had.
Because you've wasted time on men that were not chemically in love with you.
But they were lusty after me.
They were lusty for sex, not making love.
Right. Right. So what am I doing wrong if I keep having those same exact
relationships? I'm hearing that you're not telling of your fears.
Oh. And my fears would be that I don't want to be involved with the
somebody who's available to new people, other people.
Okay.
Nature has built men to be more polyamorous than we women. But we have a lot of maleness, too. But we really can't. It's really amazing how chemistry, when two people share it, it's like you've known them in a past life. You feel like we've been together forever.
Yeah, I felt that with this last guy, but he seemed to feel that with lots of people. And
I
darling, he didn't have it with you. That's what we're saying. Don't date men that are not in love with you.
I have no idea. I don't think any man has ever been in love with me.
I think you have not required it. You wasted time on men that weren't in love with you, but lusted you.
Right. And I don't want to keep doing that.
Then so don't do it.
So if guys are lusty for me, then I reject them.
No, what you do is, you don't have men, you don't get serious, you don't have intercourse with men that don't want to make love to you.
And how would I know that?
Have you ever had a man make love to you, ever?
No, I don't believe I have. And I'm 46 years old.
I fully understand that. I had a woman who was a virgin in her 50s, and we got her a boyfriend.
But they've always been really lusty after me, every guy I've got news for you.
They were lusting after you sexually, but they weren't loving you. They weren't making love.
Right. Exactly.
Well, don't have sex with them. You'll bond, and they're not bonded to you.
Okay. So do I just like avoid them? Because that's what I did for 13 years. I avoided all men that I was attracted to that were attracted to me because it felt like the same exact thing.
I got news for you. It's not. I want to be with men that's...
Okay, I have no idea how that would look or how to go about...
Don't have intercourse until you feel it. You'll know it when you feel it.
Okay. I'll keep calling
you
in the meantime.
Good.
All right, thank you, Dr. Pat.
Welcome.
Thank you, Kelly.
Welcome.
Thank you, caller. Bye.
Well, that was an interesting evening.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what. I think that's what's interesting is she doesn't feel like she's ever truly been loved or made love to. And she is not the first person, which is so strange, that has said that, that I have been privy to that this week. And I'm the person who told me that is 56-year-old, says, I don't think anyone's ever truly loved me. And
well, I'm going to tell you something.
I was sad. I was sad by that, Dr. Allen.
I have learned in the 50 years that I've been a therapist, and I walk in like I've been married 4 times, you know, done everything. I know what I'm saying.
Oh, I know you do.
You see what I'm saying? But conveying it to somebody. See, when a woman wants to do good to feel good, she's a man, no matter what it is.
No, I agree.
When a woman wants to feel good to do good, she can't. She can't do good to feel good. She can't. Once you feel, you want that.
Right, you become hungry for it. So I have a question for you because what this woman just said and this other woman said to me about 3 days ago, because her relationship, it was a long marriage, about, I think she said 26 years.
Yeah.
So that long marriage of 26 years ended. And then I'm wondering, is she just feeling that she was never loved because she's in the pain and the withdrawal from the relationship and the bonding and oxytocin?
How long does it take to get over being in love with the dead person? 2 years?
2 years.
I can almost see it happening. Grief is a 2-year project.
She has been divorced 4 years. And
okay.
That's what she said to me. He never loved me. He never loved me. And I was like,
she knew that with the touch, with the eyes. The eyes will do it.
So same thing with this woman tonight on the phone.
Yes.
She just
if
never
a woman feels safe with the man. Okay. She will either do one of two things. She'll either give him premature sex because it swept her off her feet.
Uh-huh.
That's why churches and governments were built to protect women from men that were in love with somebody and swept them off their feet.
Right.
Or the women set up boundaries, which they sometimes do with my work, set up boundaries to be in control of the man. And you can't, that doesn't work.
Right.
It isn't in love.
Now, she had a question, how will she know? And I love what you said, you'll know. But one of the other things I think women do is...
The first thing you'll know is you're afraid of feeling out of control. That's the biggest one.
Right. Like, you know, when you hit...
When a woman says, when you're afraid of him, I don't like him. He's too competitive, mm-hmm. conquering, and controlling. See, women are built to be passive, patient, and vulnerable. Men are built to compete, conquer, and control. When women get into compete, conquer, and control, they're men. When men get into passive, patient, and vulnerable, they're women.
Yeah, and it also goes back to that thing, too, like the courting thing. I think that women don't let men court them anymore.
No,
I don't know. I think
feel,
it's a, like a lost
what it's
art.
Like? It's like being hunted.
Right.
Remember, women died of sexuality until mm-hmm. obstetricians could save our lives.
Yeah,
literally,
until they started washing.
The most dangerous thing.
Yeah,
sex
I just read.
Are the big dopamine producers and the big criminal producers, too.
Yeah. We're seeing that in spades right now. So, what do they have to do? I mean, I get a lot of women that say, well, I get home from work and this and that and the other. And I'm like, you were just coming home with your testicles on. You need to remove the testicles at the door.
Before you get
you
home,
out
that's exactly right.
Yeah.
And then they have to speak. They have to talk using the tools because they're used to being equal at work.
And I understand that. It's like my one girl, I told her she had to metaphorically take off her, you know, her work clothes, her work
yes.
jacket. You know, I said, go out to your car, take off your work jacket and your briefcase, open the trunk, put them in there, lock the trunk, shake it off, get in the car, put on your favorite music or something wonderful
yes.
and drive home.
Music, beautiful.
And
not
she was
news.
Like, I can't.
Not news.
Not news, God, not news. Oh, no. Oh, heavens, no. Well, I hope that maybe we can do a show on the lost art of flirting and learning how to be courted in this age. We are out of time, Dr. Allen. What do you have to say before we go?
The only way you know you love yourself or anybody else is by the commitments you're willing to make and keep.
Okay, everybody, we love you. We're going to be back not next week, the week after. I want to thank Robert Storr for being with us. I hope if you missed our segment with Robert, you will go back and listen to our archive. He had great information on suicide hotlines and numbers in this strange and trying time. It was a really great segment. Until next time, we love you. Be safe. Happy Thanksgiving. Bye-bye.
Bye.